It's Ginny here on The Ginny Show, Saturday brunch edition. God, I love a good brunch. I usually order the same thing. I'm that boring person that orders toast with avocado and smoked salmon on top. Maybe a bit of halloumi on the side, but halloumi's pretty scarce here in New York. I've got the pleasure of having brunch with Kerry Lee. Now, she's an energy and fitness coach, and she's also a fellow podcaster. She hosts an awesome podcast on female body empowerment called The Good Curves, and she's joining me for brunch today. Hello, Kerry.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Thank you so much for having brunch with me. I'm not sure if you're on a particular diet, but I do appreciate your time.
No dieting for me. I eat for me, and I love brunch because I'm not a breakfast person. So brunch is like the perfect time for the first meal for me.
That's great. What do you actually order off a brunch menu?
So when I do go for brunch, I am one of those, what do you call it? It's like the Eggs Benedict, but with the salmon, the smoked salmon in it.
Nice.
Yeah, that's my order. Nothing too fancy.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're biracial, according, and I love, like, in America, it's never just, in Australia, we go a bit casual and we're like, oh, she's a halfie. But here you're very proper about it. It's like biracial. So tell us a little bit about your background and where you grew up.
Yeah, so I'm actually from Singapore, born and raised. My dad is American. My mom is Chinese Singaporean. So actually not too far from you. We're kind of neighbors.
Fantastic.
Over there in Australia. Yeah, and in Singapore, it's casual too. I think the rest of the world is pretty casual. I think the United States is a little more like trying to always be very correct. So when I'm here, I'm like, I'm biracial, but I'm just a mixed kid. I'm like, you know, been called all the different things. Like you said, halfy. When Harry Potter came out, I was like, what do they call it? The muggles or...
you're half-blood.
Yeah, I'm a half-blood. So born and raised in Singapore, and my, you know, parents had a scuba diving shop while we grew up. So I spent my Monday to Friday in Singapore going to school, doing gymnastics, and every weekend on the boat scuba diving. I've been scuba diving since I was 4 years old and was a gymnast. So from there, when I moved to Ohio, I went to Ohio for college at 16. I started coaching gymnastics instead just because I had so many injuries and my body's pretty beat up from it. So I went to school there and traveled around a bit after like going through college and decided that I wanted to do more than I was ready for a change. I loved coaching the kids and the teenagers, but I was like, let me help some adults. Let me see what this is about. So I got into personal training in 2009. So I was 21. So I started that in Singapore, but because I was kind of just being nomadic, I had coached in a few different countries. So just have been able to see kind of all the cultural differences and preferences, especially for women when it comes to like what they want their body to look like, how they're eating. And that was always really interesting to me. And even today, you know, I'm coaching, a lot of my clients are in Singapore, but I have clients in Europe, South America, and the States. And it's so interesting and fun because, you know, all the differences, all the different foods I get to work with, the different scenarios and the different cultural preferences. So love my job. I went online after a really bad burnout at 25. So about 4 years ago, I had a pretty bad burnout and as a personal trainer and decided, you know, I was looking around and I was like, these ladies, you know, they need more than a crazy hour in the gym. Like they need help with everything outside the gym as well. Their lifestyle, their sleep. Nobody's asking them about their sleep, their nutrition, their stress in their daily life. And we, as trainers, you know, we can very easily turn exercise from a good stress to a bad stress if we do too much. And you live in New York, you see the pace, like any big city pace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's very easy. It's very easy to go overboard. And so in Singapore, that's the problem we were running into. And I was like, okay, this is enough. We're doing a disservice more than a service. And that's when I decided to go online to really take the time to help them and not just the workouts, but the rest of their lifestyle as well.
What I find fascinating, what you touched on there, Kerry, is obviously the culture of, I guess, I don't want to say the Western world because the East has it too, of the go, go, go and the burnout and the anxiety. And I want to touch on that a little bit later. My question to you is, I'm Sri Lankan born, so I'm from Asia as well. So the interesting thing I find about the culture there and the, I guess, the premeditative thought forms that they have. Like if you're above a size zero, you're considered fat or obese. Do you have the same in Singapore?
I am called, it's so funny because my family in Singapore or just in just Singapore in general, they're always like, oh, you're a giant. And then I come to the States and they're like, you're just a little tiny Asian girl. And I'm just like, what am I, a giant or I'm tiny? And it's just different. And well, at least in Singapore, I can't speak for the rest of Asia, but it's starting to change a little bit where my size is being a lot more accepted. And actually having curves is being, Singapore is very trendy. It's kind of like New York, but Asia, right?
Yeah.
And so picking up on the trend and now they want curves and stuff, but definitely growing up, like my coaches, a lot of just the people I was around who weren't expatriates or weren't expats in Singapore would tell me I was too big a lot of times. And this is as a gymnast who trained 3 to 6 hours a day, had like a 6-8 pack, super lean, like 12% body fat. Wow. I was too big.
It's fascinating too, because I remember like I've always been probably more on the curvier side in my family, and my family has been blessed with the Sri Lankan, little carbs.
Yeah.
It's not functional for body movement, but it's functional for the societal belief system, clearly. Every time if I've gone overseas or gained a little bit of weight, the first thing I'm greeted with is, you're back, you're fat. It's like, okay, thank you. Lovely to see you too. I've missed you. Not.
I mean, I will say though, when I moved at 16, granted, I was training a lot in gymnastics. And then when I moved, and as a lot of the young athletes do who are inexperienced, I blew up. So I went from a size 4 to a size 9 within like a year or two. So I know I gained a lot of weight, but what was funny was in the States, they were like, you're small. Even at a size 9, I held my weight pretty well, I guess. And they were like, you're tiny. And then I would go back there like, oh my gosh, you're over 70 kilos. That's crazy.
Yeah. What do you think it is, Carrie? I've actually, it's timely that I'm talking to you because I've been reading Marianne Williamson's book, A Course in Weight Loss. So I've been doing a lesson every day. And she obviously dives into the mind and why we are kind of engineered, I guess, to turn to food, or how we consume food is generally engineered according to experience and what beliefs we have about ourselves and protection and security. And I'm actually curious to know, as a woman from Asia, much like me, do you think because the culture, or at least the conservative part of the culture, is so predicated on the woman being married to excel in society, therefore she has to be presentable to a certain weight or a certain size. Do you think that's why they're so critical about body weight?
Absolutely. I mean, if if I give you my honest opinion, I would say from my experience, just watching, I went to a girls' school. So, girls, we talk a lot.
Me and too.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I went to an all-girls Catholic school, which is worse in Australia.
Oh my gosh. I went to a Chinese school, so you had it worse by far.
Oh, wow.
I went to a Chinese school, so I would hear their experiences around, when you're in the teens and boys and stuff. I probably got hit on at, growing up maybe by two boys, and they were mixed like me.
Wow.
So the Asians, and this happened for quite a few, until recently, I would not be approached by men. And in fact, it would be the opposite. It would be like, why do you want to look like a man? And to me, it's maybe like an intimidating thing. Cause yeah, I would be stronger than some of them in the gym. I'd probably be a little bigger than some of them in the gym. And not that I'm tall, I'm 5'7", but would be at least the same height or taller than some of them as well. And I think, with Asian and they like face.
Yeah.
I think that matters a lot. And now that culture is changing and Singapore is such a diverse place. There's so many expats now. The whole dynamic of that is changing. But growing up, definitely, I didn't fit that image of the small Asian woman,
Neither did I, because I played a lot of sports, so my shoulders were a little broader. And then, you know, I remember when you know, eventually, like, obviously my build has nothing to do with who I am and the kind of person I am and how I live my life. But I've always known I was gay since I was a little kid. So when I came out, eventually my aunties were like, yes, it's all about her build. It's like, it's nothing to do with my build, auntie, seriously. But what you were saying before about how the intimidating factor or the face factor, I think it's very largely predicated in Asian countries too. And I think it's funny because you look at, you know, the body as a functioning vehicle for you, you know, having the strength in the lower body or the upper body, that's healthy for you.
Well, I mean, if we can think back in, like, not even very far, even in the developing, like, Southeast Asian countries today and stuff, like, just even the little things like fair skin and dark skin, right? Like, yeah. This is in all our culture. Like, the fairer you are, it means you're not out working in the fields when it's, like, totally, it doesn't even matter. And then it's also, so if the woman is, like, too strong, maybe she's, like, also working, like, not the type of jobs that are very class, you know, a higher class type of job.
Exactly.
All that kind of crap.
Isn't it fascinating, though, because when you go over the equator or the, forget what you call it, to the west, they want to be darker. That's why they have the sunbeds and everything. It's fascinating.
It's hilarious. And then over in Asia, we have whitening creams.
It's so true. It's so true. I remember my auntie or one of my cousins in Sri Lanka used to always request us to send her oil of ule, like, because it was,
yes,
bad. Like, seriously?
Gosh, that's still popular over there.
Yeah, it is. It is. Moving on, Kari, to, I guess, what you've been up to with the Good Curves podcast and everything. Obviously, there was a part of you, and I can kind of sense it probably was from your upbringing as well. What kind of inspired you to kind of go on this unconventional path? I love talking to women, especially, who go on this path. So what kind of inspired you to do that?
Yeah, it was really that burnout changed everything about my life and how I wanted to live it. And so when I finally, because it got to a point where my body broke down on me and I couldn't even stand for more than 20 minutes. Like, I was just a wreck. If I told you the list, I was basically menopausal at 25, but with a whole list of issues. So I was, like, losing my hair. I gained 30 pounds. I had an estrogen bloat. I had insomnia, but I was also really tired. Skin issues, gut issues. Like, the list was huge. And on top of that, like, my body couldn't, I could barely stand. Walking was hard. And so I just stopped. I just stopped in my tracks. I took a week to think about what I really want, why I'm still holding on to, like, this past identity that's kind of killing me. And just from realizing that within myself, the switch that I needed, and through the recovery, I was like, I'm not the only one that needs this. I started looking around the gym. People weren't happy that I was actually letting my clients come and do something easier. They're like, why wouldn't you want them to have a workout where they, like, throw up and, like, you know, they can't breathe anymore. And just, like, a super intense one. I'm like, you don't know what goes on in their life. And it's my client. Like, I had to stand up for what I was doing.
Wow.
And what's really cool is that by doing with high stress people, doing less can often mean doing so much more.
Yeah.
And I know you understand that as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, you know, I do. Actually, I wanted to touch on that with you. You talk about stress a lot. And it's funny how stressed we are as a society these days, with everything getting so much more efficient in terms of how we manipulate time. Stress is probably at its highest, but we don't realize. And even yesterday, funnily enough, I realized I was stressed. And because I've been a little bit more aware of my body since I've been reading this book and really trying to make a conscious effort to turn over my eating habits, is that as a society, I think we're highly stressed. And, you know, like what you said, a little bit of movement can be just the brick that we need to layer on to build that consistency.
Exactly. My clients are training 15 to 30 minutes, 3 to 4 days a week. That's all they do.
Well, that's fantastic because that's all that some people need.
Exactly. And for my people, yes, because they don't want to be professional fitness models. They don't want to go compete in a physique competition. You know what I mean? They're not trying to be that person. They're trying to have their life back. They're trying to look good, feel good, have the energy to play with their kids, have the energy to make it through a day without, like, having to struggle and have energy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's my goal. And that's what I felt a lot of my industry was missing. I felt a lot of my industry was trying to push this like fitness professional life onto someone else who isn't a fitness professional. And that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So like, why do they need to meal prep like crazy? They hate it. Like they hate every meal they're eating right now. I would not want to live that way.
Food is such an enjoyment. I remember like even me and my partner, when we eat food, we always think about the next meal, but we're like, you know what? Let's stay mindful. Let's eat this meal mindfully. But it's true. You want to enjoy what you're eating and also like be like, okay, cool. This is good food for us because everyone's palate is different, right?
Exactly. And you know, people really love extremes, but So what I do is so much balance, and I think moderation is a very popular term right now. And the thing is, moderation looks different to everybody, and how you play with that balance, it's such a experiment that you need to take that time to go through the trials and the errors. You have to try what you don't like and what you like, you know, keep what you like, get rid of what you don't like, but you need to tip the scale in different directions to find out where that balancing point is. And that takes too much time for a lot of people. And they keep jumping back and forth into these extreme things. They get results for 3 months, and then it comes right back. And then they find a different thing. They get results for 3 months, and it comes right back. And then they find the next thing and the next thing. And that is harming your body. Every time you do that, it makes it harder and harder and harder. So I know I kind of went on a tangent, but
no, it's so applicable to what you're saying, because I think you're absolutely right. I think balance is very personal, and obviously it varies on the individual as to what balance looks like. Like balance for you and I may be different for each other, you know, what balance looks like to me and to the next person, because obviously everyone's life is individual and unique to them and the circumstances that they have. And sometimes it takes a while to actually say to them, you know what, you're trying to fit into a balance or a mold that someone else has. It's not you.
Exactly. And so the thing is like, we see people who are putting in work for very short terms and getting drastic results, but that's the fast and easy way out that doesn't really get you out. It kind of just makes it seem like you got out of whatever situation you're getting out of. But putting in the work for, let's say, 6 months to a year to really like what you are doing, to really pay attention to your body and learn about your body, learn about the signs and what those mean and what works for you, what doesn't work for you, that is going to last you a lifetime. Because once you figure it out, you got to earn it. You can't just, you know, like how I eat, people are like, how do you fit this stuff in? I earned that. I know my body's limitations. I know what happens when I'm stressed. Like, because also after learning what it's like when life is as static as possible, you need to start learning what life is, how you, let's say for eating, how to eat when life gets a little crazy, when you can't work out as much, when you're going to travel. Like, you got to know and practice all these different situations, and you can't do it without experience.
Absolutely. I had a trainer in Australia, and she said to me, every kind of extreme diet you go on, it'll just shock your body and, you know, it'll respond. And I never really understood that until I moved here and got really still and became aware of what I was doing and kind of planned out my balance. But it's true. Our body is conditioned in a way that is unique to us, and we've got to really be aware of its responses and its triggers and everything like that. What do you think in your experience, Carrie, is like for women especially, what do you think is the number one obstacle for us looking after our health?
Oh, the guilt and the shame.
It's so true.
We just feel so bad if we do something for ourselves. And I think it's that. I think that is a large part. But I think also a lot of us use that, taking care of everyone else, as an escape to not deal with ourselves.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah,
I think
that's something women do a lot. You don't see it as much with men. That's not really their escape. Their escape is something different a lot of times. But I think with women, it's like, well, but I can't worry about me right now because I have to worry about everybody else. And it's like, well, okay, but what are you running from? Or even the extreme end, it's like, okay, you're working out 4 hours a day and you're being really obsessive with food. What are you running from? I think anyone who hits any extreme in their behavior has to kind of really check in with themselves and be like, am I using this as a distraction for something else? And brutal conversations with yourself, because they will be brutal and honest. When you start work, doing that inside work and tearing those things down and really learning to understand them. And of course, it's like peeling an onion. It's going to take a layer at a time, but working from the inside out does change the body. So you might have got a really, like, I don't want to say a good body, but you probably got a physique you're happy with in a very extreme way. But you could actually get a pretty decent physique as well by working through yourself. And it's going to be something that stays. Because I don't know if you've done things that, you know, are you know, you hit a fitness program, a good fitness program and a calorie deficit stuff. But as soon as you go off plan, you start seeing like all the results go away. That's not an adaptable body. And that's what forcing the body to do what it doesn't want to do. That's the kind of result you're going to get, something that won't last unless you're super focused.
It's so true.
Yeah. And I just don't think that's worth the time. Like, I want something that's adaptable. Let me be able to take a weekend vacation and still have, you know, still have my health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also that's kind of where, like you said, the guilt and shame comes into everything for women, especially because I think with life, with so many ups and downs and life just happening, sticking to a meal prep situation isn't always going to be practical.
No. And I tell you what happens with clients all the time is as soon as something gets crazy at work or with the family or they go on vacation, what's the first thing that goes out the door? The meal plan.
Like, it's so true.
The meal plan doesn't teach you how to eat for yourself, and it's boring. I guess so. You can tell I hate meal plans, yeah, but like I get so bored on them and I don't give them out. Like it's harder to learn at first how to eat for you and in a way that works with your body, not against it, but it's so worth it because that is a skill for life and you'll always be able to know how to eat no matter where you go. Doesn't matter if you travel back to Australia, Sri Lanka, Singapore, you'll know what to order. You'll know how to eat for you.
So when you advise clients about, let's just say the non-meal plan route, I'm sure a lot of them are like, yes, I don't have to prep meals. And me, myself, even though I'm Sri Lankan and being from a mother who was probably the best cook in our entire family of 4,400 people, she, like, I didn't obviously inherit that gene. My sister did. It skipped me. Maybe my kids will get it, hopefully. But I mean, that's kind of music to my ears. But I'm curious, Carrie, like, what do you actually advise your clients when it comes to the food part of it? Because obviously it's a big component of your physical transformation or your well-being. So what do you actually say to your clients?
So it does take a bit of education, but I believe it's really education. Some of this education we should have learned in school a little better, but you're going to have to need to know your basic nutrition. Like, you're going to have to know what goes in foods, what foods are made out of. So if you look at like a chicken curry, for example, what goes into that? Like what proteins, what carbs, what fats go into that? Where is your fiber source going to come from? So that you can be mindful about what you're putting into your body. So if let's say I'm going to have a chicken curry, which it is also being like, it's a full, let's say they're using full fat coconut milk, right?
Yeah.
For example, I don't know how Sri Lankans do it. I know in Singapore we use that. So there's a good amount of fat. We usually use like chicken legs. So there's like protein and fat. There's a good amount of fat. I'm probably going to go lighter on the carbs because if you have something that's a higher fat, higher carb diet, that's not going to work out for you at all. That's what's going to lead to like heart disease, diabetes, all that stuff, obesity. So just really learning what goes into different foods, what different foods are made out of so that you know, okay, this is what a good plate for me looks like. This is what a good meal for me looks like and makes me feel good. This amount of protein, this amount of veggies, this amount of carbs. And just trying to do that every meal at first. And then as you learn your body, like I said, you want a static, like you want a point in life where you're kind of as static as possible or where you really spend at least like 3 to 6 months focusing on learning about your body. Just because when stress starts to kick in, when travel starts to kick in, big life changes kick in, it changes everything completely. So just try to spend some time developing a base. And then from there, we can tweak further. So like for me, I don't eat breakfast and I don't really eat carbs during the day, but I eat a lot of carbs at night. So,
right.
Or maybe higher carbs in the morning works for you and no carbs at night. So just really trying to figure out what works for you, but it takes trial and error.
Gotcha. And you also have to be willing to kind of watch your thoughts and your body's response to it. Because it's not just a matter of, okay, I get to eat this food and eliminate that. You actually have to watch how your body responds to it.
Yeah. And also like not freaking out, like taking your body's response as feedback. So like, okay, my energy dips a lot when I eat carbs in the morning. Maybe I'm going to try not eating carbs in the morning, maybe do more like protein, veggies, and a little bit of fat. And let me see how I feel. Oh, my energy is much more stable. I love this. How about when like, okay, I'm eating this way and I gain a couple pounds. Are you going to freak out or are you going to take it as data? Be like, okay, so maybe this isn't going the right direction. So what if I tweak this? Okay, now I drop back down. Okay, let's try this for a while. It seems to work out well, you know, and that's hard. That takes practice to not freak out, but
yeah, absolutely.
You got to do it. You just got to do it and get used to it. Like, yes, you're going to freak out at first and then just talk yourself out of it and just be like, you know what? It's fine. I'm learning about my body. I have the big picture, the long game in my mind. I know that a year from now, I'm not even going to be worrying about this, and just keep going.
Carrie, this is awesome stuff. I love your perspective on food. It's clearly working for your clients and you're kind of giving them a new perspective on how to find their balance. I'm really, really curious about your podcast, The Good Curves. Clearly, you have lots of inspiring conversations on there. What made you start this podcast? Did you want to kind of offer this perspective at scale?
Yeah, I think, you know, being biracial from Singapore has its own experience. Of course, now there's a lot of mixed kids. When I go back and I see them, I'm like, oh my gosh, my kind. And it excites me because I swear, like, all of us on the island knew each other back when we were growing up. It's like, oh yeah, the other mixed kid from the west side, we know her, like, you know. So, and it's just so cool to see, and the world is just, it's mixing more and more. I think moving to Ohio, especially at 16, and being called a racist repeatedly because I was willing to talk about culture and be open and want to learn about things. And you can tell me if you agree or not, but there's so much tension around just having these conversations.
Oh my God, isn't there?
It's, you just can't even talk about it. And I'm just like, why? Why can't we talk about it? Honestly, if we started talking about it, there'd probably be less issues because there would be less fear of each other's culture. There would be more understanding and therefore more tolerance, and more tolerance, more peace. Like, to me, it all makes sense.
I think it all starts with a conversation, really, because I even noticed exactly. Moving here. I don't know if it was my, you know, innocent ignorance back in Melbourne where I live, because there were like over 250 cultures. So I didn't really get exposed to that much racism, you know, in the latter stage of my life. When I moved here, maybe there was a little bit, but I was too young to comprehend what that meant. But what I noticed moving, especially to America, is the labels here are very loud. I don't know if it's just me, but in Australia, see, like, you know, Ravi, he's a guy who makes awesome Indian food, I don't look at him and go, okay, he's a person of color. I'm like, that's Ravi. You know what I mean?
I know.
It's really weird.
Yes. Oh, I definitely agree. And, you know, just, I mean, I know Singapore is a very small country, and so it's very hard to compare to America, but just being able to own our cultures and, you know, like back home, a table of us of all different ethnicities can sit down and we would literally joke about stereotypes, not in a bad way. And I'm very scared of how I sound coming up, how this sounds, but not in a bad way. Like, we would all literally be able to make fun of our own stereotypes and not, you know what I mean? And nobody would take offense to it because we knew that that didn't mean we would be racist towards another, you know, like, we accepted that each ethnicity or, you know, tradition had certain tendencies, and that was okay. And we owned it, like, you know, and it's just so frustrating for me here because it's like, why can't we be proud of our like tendencies?
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Even for me, so, Sri Lankans and my family are the butt of my jokes. I would have no comedy stand up if it wasn't for them. Yeah, I'm surprised I have an invite to Christmas, you know, lunch every year still, because they don't put this on the podcast. I'm like, I will.
Oh my God. Don't you worry. And I love the accent, but like, I just, you know, I'm done kind of, you know, being shy about it. I want to be able to have those conversations. I want to make people uncomfortable now. And so I have the podcast.
This is fantastic. Well, Carrie, I think there's definitely, we've got some kindred spirit energy going on with our Asian backgrounds and kind of having a conversation that's different to what's been culturally engineered in our upbringing. So we'll definitely have to have brunch again. I've absolutely loved talking to you and learning about you.
Yes,
so
please.
Thank you.
I want you on my podcast.
Oh, I'd love to come on your podcast. I'd love to.
Let's do it.
Some good curves, don't you worry.
Okay. You better bring it.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Carrie.
You so much for having me on. I've so enjoyed this.
Please tell the Ginny Show listeners where we can actually find you.
Sure. I spend a lot of time on Instagram at Carrie Lee. That's CARI_LI. And also on The Good Curves, just like that. And you can find me on there or on Facebook at Coach Carrie Lee.
Fantastic, Carrie. Thank you so much. You're an absolute legend.
Thank you. It's time to party.